Is anybody with us this evening that was not with us yesterday? Okay. A little background on the topic that we've been discussing and we'll continue to discuss start again Thursday. The topic is Gita values, and there's a connection between Gita values and reaching the hearts and the minds of audiences that are not familiar with the message of Bhagavad Gita or the message of Vaishnava understanding of chanting and engaging in devotional service to Krishna. And without a long explanation, a short one is something that in this world today, a growing number of people from all different audiences have become more interested in is meditation. It's become a wave of interest, much like yoga was and still is, but meditation was behind it and now it's catching up. Strong interest in meditation. So seminars and workshops on meditation, the art of meditation, and so forth is it will help connect our message, the Bhagavad Gita's message, with the audiences that don't know what Bhagavad Gita is, or those that think they know what Bhagavad Gita is, and they instead they know what Bhagavad Gita isn't. And then it's a little more challenging if they think they know and they don't know that they don't know. It's a little more challenging. So meditation overcoming negative emotion, because the concern regarding negative emotion is spiked also. It's become an industry in the West and in China, an industry in the sense that it's in the medical profession, I've been told by medical practitioners, is the fastest growing profession and expenditure in the whole of the medical profession, dealing with negative emotion or depression tendencies, not only pharmaceuticals but the whole approach. And it's known that meditation is very helpful. Just on that particular note, by some arrangement or another, on September 11th this year, I'm going to be at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, speaking before an audience. Some of you may recall from Vyasa Puja, telling the story about Bhakta Joe, who I met on an airplane and was interested in meditation. Well, it turns out Bhakta Joe is a, what do you call it? He's attending university because of benefits he gets from being a military person. So he's like a retired military person who did some number of years in the military, and now he's doing a master's degree at the University of Alabama at the expense of taxpayers. And he's interested keenly in meditation, so he formed a club when he went back to the University of Alabama. And he didn't call it a meditation club, that's what I thought he was going to call it, because he's a military person. He has formed an organization that's somehow connected, the name of it is something to do with people that are connected with military. I forget the name of it. It's a student organization. And what they do at the student organization that Joe's interested in, meditation. So I'm going to be speaking for 40 to 50 graduate students, all in the same category as him, former military people, who have post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, you've heard of that one before, right? PTSD. It's got its acronym. It's a post-traumatic stress. They've been through the military, they've seen horrible things, and they've got a lot of trauma in their system. There was an American gentleman that came to the Sunday program. Maybe you noticed him, a big fellow, kind of like big like Bhima, American guy. And he wanted to speak to me afterwards, after the program we spoke, and he's in the same space. He's a former military person doing meditation because he has post-traumatic stress. It's out there, for those of you that are not informed. It's out there. So I'm the topic that I've been asked to speak about is September 11th and meditation and the connection between the two. On September 11th. For a group of, you know, military people. Take that for interesting, huh?
So what's happening here?
Oh. So, meditation, overcoming negative emotion. It's you can look it up. I did. PTSD and meditation. It's the number one topic for, besides pharmaceuticals, for overcoming post-traumatic stress disorder. Not just managing it, but overcoming it. So from that topic, taking the same audience into Gita values. Because once you know about meditation, and you know about its benefits for overcoming negative emotion, how do you move into the positive space? How do you move into the positive space? And that positive space has to do with connecting with Bhagavad Gita's message. So this is an audience not of former military people. This is a different audience. But the same principle, so I've had a sense yesterday when touching on the Gita values topic and the method of doing so, there wasn't like a high audience connect somehow. I felt that. So I want to continue with the topic, but approach it a little differently. And we'll start with spiritual culture and its values. Because I'll repeat something for those of you that weren't with us yesterday. Some 8 or 9 years ago, the federal government Education Department of India had a big Kumbh Mela, big conference in Delhi on the topic of education in India today. And the keynote speaker summarized that just education in India today can be summarized in 5 words. Information, 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 no transformation. Real education is meant for character development. That's our founder Acharya's instruction. A child or an adult that is educated will have values, and lesser importance than information is values. Because if you put information in the hand of a person that doesn't have character, it can be very dangerous. That's called modern society. Information technology, or machinery, or devices, or this and that, in the hands of a person who doesn't have character, they can do very bad things. And that's modern society. People are doing very bad things with technology, whether it's weaponry, without going into it. There's a version of Mahabharata that says when Arjuna rescued Maya Danava from the Kandava forest, long story, it's in Mahabharata, he then came with folded palms in person before Arjuna and Krishna and offered Arjuna, "I'd like you save my life. I'd like to reciprocate and make some offering of service to you. If you like, I can teach you all of my secrets of mysticism." Arjuna looked at Krishna. Krishna said, "No. That will spoil everything." So Maya Danava then was offered the service of building Indraprastha within the Kandava forest. So that's what he did. He built, with his mystic powers, a place for the Pandavas to rule and reside in that portion of the kingdom that had been allotted to them, the forest portion. So, technology, probably here in the room, there's a number of persons that have some IT profession and or some engineering profession. And fortunately, people of Indian background have piety in their background, but with impiety plus information technology equals modern society. People can do bad things, and people do bad things with... So how to strike a better balance? There has to be spiritual culture. There has to be spiritual culture. And for spiritual culture to manifest, then there must also be the values that accompany spiritual culture. So in this room, even our children and everybody else has some degree of familiarity with Bhagavad Gita. Some degree of familiarity with Bhagavad Gita. And so the Oxford University group of devotees, some of you know that there's a group of professors who are Hare Krishna devotees and professors at the same time. They had established a relationship with Oxford University, and they put together a formal proposal that Vaishnava studies become a department within the religious studies of Oxford University. It took about a decade of working things out, and it was worked out, and there's now a formal department with the Oxford University stamp of endorsement for Vaishnava studies by Hare Krishna devotee professors with PhDs in different fields. And to help the students understand Bhagavad Gita properly, they created this little topic that we're discussing, Gita values. And the way that it's being presented, this topic, the values of spiritual culture, is very, very simple. It's meant less on the information and more on the transformation side. So that there is this relationship between the values of Bhagavad Gita and our lives where there's at least some expectation or hope to go further along the bhakti path or further along the path to Krishna. Values are important. I'm going to show you that in this nice little illustration. Here's an image of an iceberg. And what we see generally is what's above the surface of the water, the tip of the iceberg. And for those who speak about an iceberg as a metaphor for understanding spiritual culture or culture in general, there's what you see, behaviors, anything that's viewable or, you know, something you can measure empirically, what's going on in the world that you can view. And that's one part of culture, the behaviors, achar. And then there's something that's just below that, and that's the values of a person or group of persons or culture or community. It's their official belief, their doctrine, something that they hold to be important and of value. And from values come behaviors, commonly. If you want to change people's behaviors, you have to change their culture. That's what the British decided when they sent their envoy from the British government to go examine India and see if it could be made part of the British Empire, British Commonwealth. That was the decision that was made. It came back and reported to the Parliament. You have to break their culture. Otherwise, British can't rule India. So that was their systematic effort, and they were good at it. Devalue everything that comes from India, upgrade and value everything that comes from Europe, especially England. And that was necessary in order to rule effectively. And when Gandhi brought back traditional values, it became much more difficult to rule. And boycott things that are European and take indigenous, you know, products from Indian culture. Anyway, from values come behaviors. Then there's what's below the values, and that's what's really important. Deeply held beliefs. Something that doesn't come and go through time, or your change of belief system, something that's ever the same, like, you know, who you really are. And that we're going to be touching on that because that's one of the values in Bhagavad Gita, but that value is resting upon something that's deeper, the bottom of the iceberg. So the role of values, we're discussing Gita values, it's to help shape our behaviors because, my dear devotees, sometimes we have a value that doesn't match what we do. We have an understanding of what devotion to Krishna is and we do other things besides that. You'll see a nice... we'll do this one. There's a topic that goes along with progressing in spiritual life. The image shows it over on this side. That's where we are. And over on the right side, that's where we want to be. And in between, there's a big gap. This is what we know. This is what we want to become, and there's a big gap. So it could be, you know, the young people here who they're being encouraged by their parents to do well in school so they can get into a good college, so they can get a good career, so they can live a proper life as an adult. I remember attending a home program one place, it was a pretty amazing experience. Right over here, like where the Mridanga is, there was a little six-year-old girl. I mean, little bodied six-year-old girl. She was really super attentive. And just spontaneously, when the class was over, I turned to her, before I even questioned, and I said, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And she said, "I want to be a pediatrician." You know, when I was 6 years old, I never even heard the word pediatrician. What to speak of, you know, later I had an idea, I wanted to become a doctor, but I didn't think of what specialty. She's a little six-year-old girl. You know, there's a big gap in between where she is at six and where she wants to be. There's a lot of challenges, and who knows if when she graduates from medical school, if she wants to be a pediatrician. There's even, our goals may change as we move along. But there's a big gap. This is the term is liminal space between where we are and where we want to be. So there's this information, and it's one thing to have information, and it's another thing to have wisdom. Or jnana vijnana, astakyam brahma karma svabhavajam. There's a big gap between knowing, having information, like a professor can have information, but doesn't mean he has wisdom. He may have bad character. He may have misinformation. Many people do, that are in professor positions. Or spiritual teachers that have misinformation and people are following them and they're being misled. It's abundant. It's the opposite. It's rare to find real knowledge. Read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 8 through 12. That's a response from Krishna to Arjuna about knowledge. And knowledge, you read those so many items, and each of those items are character items or qualities. There's a big gap between knowledge, real knowledge, real wisdom, and knowing about something, having even correct information about something. That's this liminal space. And the whole of Gita is to place Krishna at the center and help us go from what we know to the way that we live our lives. And that's the intention behind the covering of this topic, Gita values topic. So we're going to be now discussing Gita value number 3, that's should be number 2 actually in your list, Amanitvam. If you look at, I invite you to look at chapter 13, text 8 through 12, write it down for those of you that have notes. And when Krishna is describing items of knowledge, the first one, Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Kshantar Arjavam. So, humility and pridelessness. Amanina, Manadena. Same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught. The Trinadapi Sunichena. Same message. It's a fundamental for anyone who wants to advance in spiritual culture. There has to be humility. Okay, negatively, if there isn't humility, one isn't going to even want to advance in anything because you're not humble. Humility doesn't mean a lot of things. We'll be touching on what that doesn't mean. But to know that you don't know and to want to know. That's a starting point. Humility means a state of being humble, or the word humility has its origin in the Latin word humilis, meaning low. Now, humility, that's an English word, but many of the words in English are derived from Latin. And once in the course of my travels, I was visiting in Peru. And I was introduced to this elderly couple that were working on their 8th PhD. And each of their PhDs were in linguistics. And what had evolved for them was an understanding that the root language of all other languages is Sanskrit. And they knew it not just like armchair, we can say it, and you know, it doesn't really carry the same weight to somebody that has 8 PhDs. The root of all languages, the mother language, is Sanskrit in a very authoritative way. Just like English language has a lot of roots or derivation, datus, in Latin. So, meaning low. And in Chinese, there is this saying, be like the bamboo. The higher you grow, the deeper you bow. Of course, that's if it's young bamboo. Chinese proverb. Just a little anecdote. I was presenting this very same topic to a group of people in China. It was a 4-part, 2 hours each, in other words, an 8-hour seminar or workshop on Gita values. And interestingly, right across the street from the place that was our venue for having this workshop was a building that on the rooftop there were bamboo trees that's 6 feet tall growing on a flat roof. And I was wondering, how's that possible? Because there's no soil. It's just a roof, a little roof and a rooftop and 6-foot bamboos. So it's a certain, I was told, there's a certain variety of bamboo that only grows 6 feet tall because many bamboos grow huge. But it's a certain variety, it only grows 6 feet tall. And it doesn't require a very deep root system. And then they repeat it. You know, there's the saying from this particular variety that when the wind comes, it can bow down. They refer, without my mentioning this, they make this reference. This type of bamboo bends with the wind. So with life, there's winds. There's winds of good fortune, winds of misfortune, and there's winds because it's the nature of the place. Sometimes it's not windy, but sometimes it's windy. And if you're like a bamboo, when the wind comes, when misfortune comes, or even good fortune comes, you stay humilous. You stay humble and you bow down to your destiny or to the circumstance of life. Doesn't mean you shut your intelligence off, but inside there's this condition of being humble. So now, what is humility? And we'll start with some of the things that it's not. In the West, psychology has created this term, low self-esteem. Probably everybody here. Well, maybe the kids don't know what low self-esteem is yet. You heard that term? You heard it, but he hasn't. Okay. you know, that's what's in the background. I'm worthless, I'm bad, I'm dumb, I'm no good, I'm a failure, boo-hoo. It's feeling badly about oneself. I'm unmotivated, a term that I've heard lately that in the corporate world is demotivated. Yeah? Yes? It's out there. Okay. So, you can't even, you know, do anything. You feel ashamed. Mode of ignorance. So that's not what humility is. Being quiet and just be tolerant. Like, you know, you're in the company of somebody, maybe in the workplace or maybe at school or something, and somebody's a grumpy person, or somebody's a mean person, or somebody's a belligerent person. And what humility is not, is to inside your heart think, poor fellow, I'll just tolerate you. There's not any compassion at all. It's all about oneself, and I'll just be humble, and I won't say, you know, excuse me, you just stepped on my foot and it hurts, ouch. I won't say anything, I'll just tolerate it. That's not what humility is either. Humility is not being a blind follower. Somebody is going, I know some people, but they understand this about themselves. My need for acceptance is so strong. When I'm with others, I'll just go along with whatever others are doing, and that's a weakness. So humility is not that, blind following. In order to be a good devotee, you have to turn your intelligence off and just be a good blind follower, just say yes to everything. That's not what humility is. That's a mistake. What happened? This is the wrong version. It's supposed to have been changed. And I don't have the changed version. Sorry, folks. It's supposed to, this is the Chinese version, and the new version is with the English Bhagavad Gita. And then there's another series coming up. Do you have it? You didn't bring it. Okay. Well, there's another series that shows going to China, and instead I had it redone for St. Louis. But you get it anyway. Humility in the Bhagavad Gita is a virtue, which is seen in behavior, but which rests on understanding and character. Remember that iceberg picture. Value is something that you do, but more importantly, it's something that you understand and something that's within you. It's unobservable character. Character manifests itself. Tell a little Prabhupada story. Two stories. Prabhupada story. Prabhupada told the story when he was a businessman, grihastha. He was visiting an industrialist one time, and in the course of the time with this industrialist, out of curiosity, the man was going to be interviewing two potential persons to run a plant or a big operation, like a supervising type of person. He was interviewing two candidates. Make it the story quick. The first candidate was a nice man, but his resume wasn't so abundant. But when the business owner interviewed him, he answered his questions in a very thoughtful and reasonable manner. And then he left. Then the second person came in that had this really big resume, all these credentials, academic and work and this and that, and his answers were also reasonable, and then he left. Then Prabhupada asked him, which one are you going to hire? And he said, the first one. And he said, the first one, and Prabhupada asked, you know, what, but he doesn't have the same resume. And the man said, yes, but I felt this first person was humble, and although he doesn't know as much, I feel I can train him because he has good character. And when he came in, he closed the door. And the second man is a little proud. He knows a lot, but it's going to be difficult to work with that man because he's a little proud. He thinks he already knows. And he didn't close the door when he came in. Now, that's a small thing. But it's a, for persons who have culture, it means something. I remember the first time I was in the lobby of a temple, and I was walking by, you know, sannyasi, my dhoti, and there was this nice young man who was at the reception desk. Because he was at the reception desk, he couldn't pay obeisances, but as I was walking by, he stood up, the receptionist. And I was, you know, it was noticeable. He didn't make a big deal about it, but I noticed that each time I walked by, he would stand up. So I asked him, because in America you don't do that. So I asked him, he said, that's just culture. I was trained as a little boy, when you're in the presence of a, just like in the U.S., in the court system, you're sitting down, and the judge walks in, and the court clerk says, everyone rise. And if you don't, you're in jail. Because there has to be respect for the post of a judge, and if there isn't respect for the post of a judge, you don't belong in the court. You belong in jail. That's American law. That doesn't teach, you know, stand to respect people that are respectable. It's an item of culture that this man noticed. He didn't close the door, although he has credential. He doesn't have character. So I don't want to hire him. I want to hire somebody who has character and they're trainable. I can work with this man. He has sufficient acumen. And so it's not always the duck that quacks the loudest gets the bread. You've heard that one? Another Prabhupada story. One morning walk, I'm enjoying telling Prabhupada stories, and I'll get back to our Gita values in a moment. But it is related. One morning walk in New York, Brooklyn Battery Park, early morning, 6 a.m. We're in a park, and there's lots of dew on the ground. It's, you know, early summer morning. And about 15 of us walking along in the middle of the park, and over there to the left we saw a pond, big pond, in the middle of the park. So Prabhupada looked up and walked over to the pond. As we walked over to the pond, some ducks came swimming over because they were used to getting something from the people that are in the park. So he asked, anybody have any prasadam? So somebody had some prasadam. And so he said, feed the ducks. So what did the ducks do? They reached their neck out and started making the duck sound. Quack, 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 quack. And then the prasadam was gone, and we turned and went back to the path. And then Prabhupada put his cane down on the sidewalk and said, what did we learn today? And everybody looking at each other. And Prabhupada said, the duck that quacks the loudest gets the bread. Looked at all of us and went on. But it's not always just making a lot of noise. It can be if you have character. And for spiritual culture, that's more important than making a lot of noise. Or being able to do a lot of things, or having more information technology under your belt, and then you're going to be successful. Because that's not what spiritual success is. anyway. And that's our topic. Gita value. Humility rests on understanding of oneself. So yesterday, the understanding of oneself was we're spirit soul, not the body. That's a Gita value. And if you actually understand the self, then it's possible to be humble. We'll say the same thing, different way. Real humility is resting on a spiritual conception of self. False humility is resting on a material conception of self. When I was little, I wasn't trained, you're a spirit soul, you're not the body. I was trained another principle, a biblical principle, a New Testament principle called turn the other cheek. Have you heard that one before? Someone slaps you. And humility is, go ahead, hit me on the other side. You know, I tolerate you because I'm humble. So real humility is not resting on a material conception of humility. It's resting on a spiritual conception of humility. It's understanding who you really are. So then comes, who am I? Question. Chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita. Now, later on in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, very few people are asking this question. Manusha nam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. And of those asking the question, hardly one really knows the answer. And of those who know the answer, millions of those, hardly one knows me. The Bhagavad Gita is taking us to knowledge of Krishna, but before knowledge of Krishna, someone has to ask the question. Because if you give the answer and they're not asking the question, it's going to bounce. Or they may nod their head and say yes, but then they don't live that way. That's what we talked about last night. Samadarshana, we may have this view, we're to see everyone and treat everyone equally, and we don't do it. We have our groupism things and things like that. So, yeah. Anyway, these images were created for China. But it applies to St. Louis too. So there we are. In our solar system and within the solar Earth planet, there's a world map. And if you're living in China, you look at China. And tomorrow we'll show you looking at the United States, North America. And then there's China. And then there's Kunming in Yunnan province. And there's the city of Kunming. So is that who we are? We're residents of St. Louis. Or, you know, before you may have been residents of somewhere else or born in somewhere else, and now you're in St. Louis, so you're St. Louis Vasi. No. If that's not the case, then who are we? So we went through this yesterday, but real humility is recognizing who we are in our natural state and then acting from that platform. Who we are as insignificant spirit souls, and the impact that we can make on life around us during our lifetime is embracing this mood of service. Here's another what humility is not. Note, here's Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, 8 through 12. We mentioned this already now three times. It's a very important section of Bhagavad Gita. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. There's a fellow that's really anxious to get honor from others. A little sharing. One of the presentations I have made in universities that's really popular is narcissism. Because millennials have a huge amount of narcissism. those who are sociologists of study. And narcissism is an overindulgence in what's on the outside and neglect of what's on the inside. Cosmetic beauty, cosmetic industry, plastic surgery, and fashion, and showing who you are by some distinctive mark like tattoos and metal in your face and, you know, all kinds of, I'm an individual. It's all external. Putting your hat on backwards. So many other external signs of, you know, being an individual and being whatever. But empty inside. But because of that emptiness inside, depression. Because there isn't satisfaction. So that's part of the depression industry. And the amounts of suicide and overdose of drugs. Drugs and overdose of, you know, I mean, anyway. It's a sociological phenomenon. But part of the problem, parents, please take note, is from the parenting side, and parents do this too much in modern times. There, in many homes, not all homes, but there's a little trophy room where their son or daughter or children get awards for all kinds of things. They get a trophy and a this and a that and accolades for, you know, anything. And it feeds the absence of humility. And the reward is you get your recognition for something that's on the external side and without character development. It's a problem. It's created an industry in the West, at least. So to have the satisfaction of being honored by others, or anxious to have it, humility is one doesn't have that difficulty. It's Prabhupada's purport. Here's Mother Teresa making the statement, if you are humble, nothing will touch you, neither praise nor disgrace, because you know what you are. Now, we've been saying, who are you? And she's saying, what are you? And that's what Sanatan Goswami also said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what am I? I don't know if you've noticed this when you hear Srila Prabhupada recorded lectures, and he speaks of this pastime where Sanatan Goswami, former prime minister in the government of Nawab Hussain Shah, which means like one third of India today, he was the prime minister. Prime minister. He left it all, came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying, people call me Pandit, because he was a Saraswat Brahmin, highly learned in scripture, seven languages fluent, statesman, you know, really smart man. So people called him Panditji. And he said, I'm such a fool, when people say Pandit, I think, yes, I'm a Pandit. But you want to know the truth, I don't even know what I am. So I'm a blank slate, can you please instruct me? What am I? And it's K-Ami, it's not who am I. So, meaning, we're a tiny fragmental particle. We have a personality, but first is, what's my relation with the source of everything? That picture of the universe, or at least our solar system. Where do we fit into the big picture of things? And we're just a little tiny speck. And when you understand that, neither praise nor disgrace can touch you. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, humility assisted Arjuna to understand himself and the yoga system that he was being advised by Krishna to see his part in the bigger scheme of things. That is, in this case, Krishna's plan. We may not be able to understand Krishna's plan if we're failing to be minimally humble. There are events in life that are good fortune, ill fortune, or praise and disgrace, or the wind's blowing this way, that way. We don't understand the big picture. And we're just caught up in the small picture and feeling different feelings that take us for a ride. And Gita value teaches us to not do that, but to understand what we are. And being able to then take up the process of bhakti yoga properly. Humility is not weakness. It nurtured Arjuna's self-esteem, self-confidence, and courage. You're going to see a chart, I think, shortly, that explains this, his self-esteem, self-confidence, and courage. There's another image. You saw this before. We pointed it out yesterday. There's a key, and there's a lock in the shape of a heart. And you need the key to open the lock. So this humility is the key to open your heart so that you can understand and have wisdom, not just information. It's the jewel of the broad-minded, and it is the key to a spiritual life. There's this nice saying, you'll see, down in the bottom, the image is a person that has light in their hand. Humility gives acceptance. Acceptance gives courage. Courage gives openness. Openness gives access to higher teachings. That's how we get wisdom. It starts with humility. Not just information, but it leads to accessing higher teachings or becoming a wise person. There's a Confucius saying that ends our little presentation for this evening. Humility is the solid foundation of all virtues. And there's many other such statements. Now, Confucius wasn't a spiritualist. Here's some information. In the U.S., Confucius schools are becoming very popular. And there's a reason. It's godless. But it teaches values. So there's a market in America today for people who want to be good but not rest that goodness upon God. I don't know if you've been asked this. I have many times. Why do you accept that there's God? And why not just be honest and say, you don't know whether there's God or not, you don't know, but you know it's good to be good. So be a virtuous agnostic. Why is it not a better, more honest position to be a virtuous agnostic than a God-centered value person? Have you been asked that question by some of the Western people that you associate with? He's shaking his head no. You'll meet... how old are you now? 9 and a half. Working on 9 3/4. And soon to be 10. So, as you grow in years, you'll meet such people. I met one of them. Well, a little story. Arun Sridharan, who's now a nuclear physicist, graduate from Stanford University, brilliant young man. When he was 15, he was the valedictorian of his class. He graduated from high school when he was 15 with a full scholarship at Stanford University. He was brilliant. But he was studying at a private school. So I was visiting at University of Oxford, Mississippi, which is the home of the University of Mississippi, because a devotee, his name is Prasanatma, his father was a dual PhD professor at that university in philosophy and religion. I was invited to speak there. And Arun was coming home to visit his parents on his way to go to Washington, D.C. to attend a 50 young person meeting with the president, because the valedictorian of each state was going to go meet with the president. So he was coming from school on his way to Washington, and I happened to be there at that moment, and he said, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure." He said, "I asked Mom and Dad, but they didn't have an answer. They said, Swamiji's coming, well, you can ask him what he thinks." And that was the question. He said, "Kids at school, they ask me, and I don't know how to answer the question. Why are you not an agnostic, virtuous person, as opposed to a believer in God? And that's the foundation for your virtue. Why? It would seem the other is more honest. I don't know how to answer. My faith is not shaken, but I don't know how to answer that question." Bright young man. So I said, "What do values rest on?" I said, "There's somebody I know in the city of New York. They work with the Board of Education for the city of New York, and they had some laughter. They had, during one of their conferences, somebody told this little story. 10 years ago, or 8 years ago, whatever it was, to get kicked out of the classroom, there were three main things. You spoke out of turn without raising your hand, you're kicked out of the classroom. And you would talk back to the teacher, you're kicked out of the classroom. Or you'd throw a spit wad." You know what a spit wad is? You've heard of that one, okay. "And you're kicked out of the classroom. And now, you know, this was some years ago, but now it's, if you threaten the teacher's life, you're kicked out of the classroom. If you're carrying a concealed weapon, you're kicked out of the classroom. And if you physically assault another student, you're kicked out of the classroom." So I said, "This was the Board of Education for the city of New York. Now, what's the standard? And if you don't have a standard, then with time, standards move. Value is what's good and what's not good. It just keeps moving, because it's vox populi in the Latin phrase. It's whatever is popular today, that's what's the standard," without giving modern examples of how values have changed over time. You all are well aware of some of those. And your children in school today are being exposed to that shifting of values. So they may ask themselves, or be asked by others, "Why do you have this value instead of our value? What's the basis for it?" Same question. And therefore, the Vedic standard is, we accept that which is coming from Apurusheya, a perfect person, someone who is beyond the four defects of the human being. We accept those as our values. And that perfect person is Bhagavan. Dharmam hi sakshat Bhagavat pranitam. Pranitam means established. Bhagavan establishes Dharma. We don't. If Bhagavan's out of the picture, what establishes what's to be done and not to be done? Vox populi. And it's Kali Yuga. The whirlpool is going down and down, and it smells bad. It's like a cesspool of badness. Manda samanda mateo, manda bhagya hupadrata. And how are you going to get value out of that? So therefore, we establish value, or what's to be done, not to be done, based on Bhagavan. He gives us, and we accept. That's our authority. Instead of the mind, that's your authority. Or the popular mindset at the time, and that's your value. So, Confucius schools have become popular because there are, at least to some degree, vestiges of a sense of what is right and wrong, what is value, what is not value. And he speaks of many of the same values as Bhagavad Gita, but it's godless. The Chinese government is promoting Confucianism. The Chinese government is behind, this is inside information, they're behind the promotion of Confucius schools in the West. I was told by one Italian devotee that Canada has banned Confucius schools because it's a tool to inculcate communism within the Confucius schools, through the medium of the Confucius schools. Because behind it is the communist government promoting values that are godless. And oops, in comes communism. So, values are not an end in themselves. We don't reject them because they're not an end in themselves. They help us get to the goal. And the goal is our restoring our relationship with Krishna. That's that bottom of the iceberg. And to help us get there, there has to be alignment between who we are, what our values are, and what our behaviors are. You know, the body, the mind, and the heart. And our true nature. And just leave it. Could you just leave it? Okay. That was to stop my digression. Now we're ready for our concluding exercise activity. You ready? Yes, yes, go right ahead. Do whatever you need to do.
Okay, hi Krishna.
Hi Krishna.
I meant to say this yesterday also, but I'm in no way qualified to stand up in front of all of you and present this exercise, because you're all more sincere devotees than I am, but Maharaj really insisted, and so I'm here. So today Maharaj described humility, which is such an amazing quality that we all strive for, and it's very, this is one of the qualities that it's very easy to say, like, you know, you should always be humble, or like, this is not humility, but this is. But when it comes to practical application, we're in situations where we have to face humility. More often than not, we don't, just because it's something that doesn't come very easy to us. And so going off of that note, our application exercise for today are some skits that some devotees have prepared. And we're going to kind of diagnose each skit and see, like, some qualities that we notice and some things that happen that we might see day to day. So to start off with our first skit, I would like Mike to please come up here. I'm going to give him a big round of applause.
You want the light?
Yes.
Light?
Light.
Can we turn off the projector? Okay, so before we start the skit, the first part of this exercise, there's going to be three people, and with the three people, they're going to be praised, and we're going to see how they react to the praise that they're given. And after each person, we're going to kind of discuss what happened and what we saw. So it would be really nice if you all really participated and called out answers and things like that. Okay, we're starting with the first two. Hare Krishna Prabhu, your class was amazing. I really appreciated everything that you said. You're a really nice speaker.
Thank you. I cannot take the praises. I nowhere close to where you are. I'm really very fallen soul. You are very much senior devotee. Please don't praise me. I cannot take it.
See. So, what did you all notice from this short role play?
Denial of praise.
Yes, denial of praise. What words did he use that made you think that it was denial of praise?
Not worthy.
Not worthy of praise.
Okay. If you say I praise you, I don't praise me, stuff like that. He's kind of judging himself, overly judging himself.
Yeah. Correct. So do you think this is the correct version of humility or the incorrect version of humility?
Incorrect.
Yay, good job. Okay, so for our next example, I would like Narayan Prabhu to please come up here. Okay, then I will be Hare Krishna Prabhu, your Sunday feast cooking is amazing.
Germany, France, or India, America, anywhere.
And scene. So what were some things we noticed from this role play? Yes.
Not humble at all.
Good job, she heard it. Bragging. Yes. What were some words that he had said? Yes.
Proud.
Yes. Good. What were some words that he had said that made you think that he was proud and not humble?
And the best cook.
Best cook. Okay. So is this correct humility or is it humility at all?
No.
Okay. Good job. Final version for the role play, we're going to have Krishna Swarup Prabhu. Big round of applause. Hi, Krishna Prabhu. You do such great work with the audio. The mics are always working.
Thank you very much. I try to serve my spiritual master and Krishna for this, and they give me the ability and the strength to do this service ever. Hare Krishna.
Okay. So what did you think about this example?
Humble,
yes. Very good. So what were some things that he said, his actions that he did, that made you think that was the correct version of humility?
Acknowledging
the appreciation and mood of service and giving all the credit to spiritual master and Krishna. Okay. Yay. So for our second part, we're going to look at so this is accepting praise and seeing humility and accepting praise, and now we're going to look at the other direction, accepting or having humility while accepting feedback. So for that, can we please have Mayank Prabhu back up here and Nisha Mataji, please?
Narayan
Mataji. Narayan Mataji. You can start.
Hare Krishna Mataji. You are such a senior devotee. I really liked your classes. You are such a very senior member in our congregation. After hearing your last Sunday class, I wanted to share some thoughts with you. Senior devotees encouraged me to share openly my heart with you. You don't mind, I observed that your Sunday class was too philosophical. And there are a lot of new devotees come to the temple on Sunday, and it will be great if you can have a little more practical examples and not too much philosophical. New devotees will get confused with so many references of the scriptures.
Prabhu, don't talk to me like this. I am a senior devotee. I have been serving the temple for so many years. I've been coming for 20 years. Maybe I've been giving classes for about 15 years. Can you even quote one shloka? I've been saying so many shlokas. Don't even try to advise me. Don't tell me this person. Don't dare you tell this to me. I just cannot believe it.
Reflect humility. Yes.
Aggressiveness.
Okay. And so, like, what can you elaborate a little bit? Like, how did you see aggressiveness?
The facial expression, the verbal expression, the body language.
Yeah.
So I'll talk about aggressive.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Any other examples?
Pride. Feedback is very constructive.
That's a very good point. So when my guru was trying to, he said in a very like nice, calm way, but the receiver was not able to accept anything, and so
he was not even listening.
Yeah. Yes.
He's not talking the talk or walking the walk, whatever she preaches. She's not practicing. She might have given lecture on humility. How many times? She's not practicing.
Yeah.
Sounded like she was like hanging her hat on her own merits. You know, like, I've been a senior devotee for 15 years. I know all these slogans.
Yeah, that was something that was very strongly put also. And so, why is that not humility?
Bragging on your credentials.
Yes.
Expecting an honor.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. You should, or she was feeling that, like, she was praised by so many people, but this one comment of feedback was not acceptable to her. Or not to her, but to her, the character that she played.
She thinks whatever she speaks or gives lecture, the others get it. She assumes that that's not good.
Yeah, that's a very good point also. Okay, so then this is not a good example of humility. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So now we'll see the flip side and see what accepting feedback with the mode of humility is like. So Ramacharya, please. Thank you.
Yes.
Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
You are such a senior member in our congregation. You give a lot of service. You serve a lot to our temple. I really like your prior classes. I have just wanted to share something with you, and senior devotees have inspired me to share the feedback with you open-heartedly. After your last Sunday class, I felt that it was too philosophical, and especially being Sunday, we have a lot of new devotees who come to the temple, and it will be great if you can use a little more practical examples and not too much philosophy. With the new devotees who come to the temple, if you reference a lot of scriptures, they'll get confused, like what to do. So, you know, think about it and not go too deep in the philosophy.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for your feedback. I was indeed looking for somebody to come and give me some advice so that I can improve my service. I know my limitations. I'm still learning, and I'm trying to be the best servant for my Guru Maharaj and Prabhupada and for Krishna and Balaram. So I will definitely take your treatment very seriously. I'm trying to improve on that. Thank you so much.
Some things that Prabhupada Prabhu had said or done that made it reflect as good humility, or the right type of humility. Yes.
But
I'm not though.
You
just gave me that
room
to act.
That is the real humility.
Right there.
Yes, Prabhu, you were saying.
Yeah, I was going to say, he said that he did everything with an attitude of service towards Krishna and the Guru.
Yeah. That's right. He said everything was in the mode of service and everything was to please the spiritual master, Prabhupada and Krishna.
And he accepted the feedback.
Yes, he accepted the feedback. Yes.
Even though he is like, he's qualified, he took the mood like he doesn't know anything and he was so submissive and he is ready to accept whatever feedback.
Not like you.
He is open and he takes suggestions.
Yeah.
And the character played by Ramacharya, he could take criticism without feeling offended or attacked.
Yeah.
And just have a boy here, so.
Oh, yes. You forgot.
Yeah.
Okay. When you get to my... So from that example, we saw how... to accept something in the mode of humility, what that looks like. What are some things that like are, might be challenging for us every on like the day to day to actually like be like how Ramacharya Prabhu was and like why we are more like how Nishama Mataji is most times. Naradi Mataji is was in our day to day lives. Yes.
I think sometimes. Mayank Prabhu is also very nice, the way he expressed to Ramacharya Prabhu about his feedback and what kind of changes he needs to do. And if that person is a little bit more aggressive and just kind of tells him, oh, you need to do this, this and that, then there's a bigger chance on the Ramacharya side to be like, oh, who is he to speak to me like that? You know, I expect a little more respect in the way he speaks to me.
Yeah,
I think that could be challenging for some people.
Yeah.
And when we forget that our identity comes from Krishna.
Yeah.
In the end, in a way that
Yeah.
It's very good. Basically, we try to cheat ourselves. Because we are neither extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are in the middle of this.
Yeah.
We never tend to show out, you know, either this extreme or this extreme. That's the problem.
Yeah. And all of your points are very valid and really nice. And this also ties into yesterday's principle where we talked about Samadarshana, how we're all spirit souls and we see with equal vision. So like Krishna Prabhu was saying, when Mayank Prabhu, he was being very, very constructive with his feedback. But usually, you know, people are not like that. They'll just be like, what's wrong with you? Like, you did that wrong. And so when we are faced with situations like that, it's also important to apply that principle from yesterday also, to know that Krishna is also inside of them, and to see also a spirit soul inside of them too. So that's one way how all these principles from the Six Deepa Values kind of tie together in our day-to-day lives. So yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Some of you have to go to work tomorrow. And some of you have to go to school tomorrow. So I think we'll follow in the evening. We normally have some discussion time, but this, I think this role play.